Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Patreon had all these great selling points and stats. I could get meaningful revenue from my fans and finally find the creative freedom I'd heard so much about. Patreon's about page said creators' incomes doubled annually. Their blog had stories, had story after story of their users making thousands a month. Of course, I was grateful for everyone who contributed to mine, but none of the site's promises were coming true. After launching my Patreon, I struggled for months to find work. Patreon filled my downtime and became a full-time job itself. I'd spend hours combing through photos, looking back on notes I'd taken on the road, researching where I'd been. I'd post on Twitter and Instagram with teasers, free stories, anything to attract my followers to my Patreon page. I made friends on the site, I shared their project on my own social media, and I kept up with all my subscribers' projects. It was a lot of work for little pay, but I was determined. A year later, my monthly earnings on Patreon have grown from $120 a month to $163 per month. That was from a piece called No One Makes a Living on Patreon, written by Brent Knepper, writing for The Outline, and this is Waypoint Radio. I'm your host, Austin Walker. Today, Danielle is out dealing with some family issues. Joining me, Rob Zachney.
Hello, hello.
Patrick Klepek.
I'm here. That Jurassic Park trailer is bad.
Oh, I didn't see it yet.
It's
I didn't
bad.
See it. We should talk about that in a second. and also, because our very own formerly starred in Jurassic World, Jeff Bacalar is here, coming to us from your home, I'm guessing.
From my temporary home.
Oh, right,
in central New Jersey.
Okay. Wow, that's far.
It's not close.
It used to be in Hoboken. That was close.
It used to be okay, and now it's far away.
If you don't know Jeff Bacalar, you should. Jeff over at CNET, also a permanent member of the Beastcast. Jeff and I have done a lot of podcasting together. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a delight to be on a podcast once again.
It's been a couple of weeks. All of your normal podcast co-hosts are in San Francisco right now. They left you behind.
Yeah, they thought it was really funny to leave me alone. Didn't really tell me what was happening.
That's what they just like tell you they'll be right back. And
yeah, I was holding Vinny's drink. He said, "I'll be right back."
Going out for some cigarettes.
And then
never came back. That was it for Vinny. Oh man, how you been doing? What are you up to these days? Let's start with plugs. What are you doing? Where should people be looking for you on the internet?
That's a good question. I'm doing a lot of new stuff for CNET. We're really trying to focus on new video endeavors.
Oh yeah, is that what the internet's about these days? Is video?
Yeah, I myself personally am pivoting to video.
Wow.
And it is a difficult pivot. But
I went on your CNET profile and it said you've written an obscene amount of articles for CNET. Do you know how many? Do you know how many it's been?
Seven.
1,200.
Really?
Yeah. If you go to your CNET profile page,
okay.
It says there's 1,200.
How do I get there?
Go on a web search engine and type in CNET Jeff Bacalar. This is going to get real funny in a second because I didn't tell the rest of the story. Okay. And then there's a picture of you, and you're like,
oh, shit.
You're giving like a cool little smirk, and says, member since April 23rd, 2007. And it says articles, 1,216.
Oh, my God.
Click on articles, and it doesn't do a thing. There's no way to see your articles because the internet is what the internet is now. God.
Oh, man. I'm going to apologize for that. I'll file a bug.
File a bug report. Send it to the web help desk.
And in 6 to 8 weeks, months, that'll be taken care of.
Oh, buddy. Listen, the product teams all work really hard. It's just sometimes, you know, they're handed priorities lists that don't necessarily reflect what the people in the pit want.
I get it. A new Star Wars movie's coming out. There are priorities.
Lord. Star Wars memes. That's what I'm... Star Wars memes. That's the priority.
That's what's in the top of the queue right now.
Yeah. Well, I think it's funny that you talk about the pivot to video, because that has been a response to changing models in advertising dollars in media. You know, there was a time when display ads, the sorts of like banner ads and takeover screen ads, were what drove a lot of money on the internet. And the money there dried up as advertisers came to understand that no one clicked those and that they didn't really affect buying patterns or kind of life habits in any meaningful way, or not as meaningful a way as they would want them to. Partially, they were also led there by Facebook and Google, who are companies that have a lot of investment in video as a platform. And so every 3 months you see a new study come out from one of those companies that says, oh, people are so engaged with video. People have a high engagement rate. If you test their level of passion, it's higher when watching a video than reading words on a page. And like, they push this narrative so hard that a lot of the advertising money goes into video, original video content now. And in general, it's like traffic has shifted in that direction. A lot of people do just like watch, 30-second clips on Facebook with the sound off, and with, subtitles on. And like, that is how they consume the most of their media now. And so we've seen a lot of switch to that.
But I mean, to be fair, I think you can, trace a similar pattern with how television worked. I mean, I don't think I understand the resistance to it, but at the same time, I understand that like mediums tend to follow a similar, path to revenue and advertising revenue. And this is, one way or another kind of, the water will always sort of follow that, least resistance. Yeah, yeah. So
the reason I think that's interesting here is like to think about that is there's this other thing that's happened and will continue to happen in this space, which is a move to direct-to-consumer product, direct-to-consumer kind of subscription-based stuff. DTC, direct-to-consumer, is what all the business people in my life call it. I'll go into a meeting and they're like, well, we have, three people working on DTC for this year. And it's like, huh? What are you talking about? Who's that? Who's DTC? Is that a wrestler? I don't know. And it's like, okay, subscription-based stuff. Because you've seen sites on a very small individual level, you've seen sites like Patreon start up, or Kickstarter, which is working on Drip, is about to relaunch, basically, which is a similar ongoing crowdfunding thing. And that is being positioned as an alternative to this. I mean, you also obviously saw Hulu. You also saw Netflix. Like, there are subscription models all through our lives now. And even in our space, in the world of gaming, you look at like what the Kind of Funny team did, leaving IGN, leaving traditional media to go create a direct-to-consumer model. Obviously, Giant Bomb does this. I think everyone is thinking about this. Like, if you read a website, if you listen to a podcast, someone on that team is thinking about how do we become a subscription model. And so the thing that happened this week, just to like bring up why I was reading from that piece and like what I want to talk about with all of y'all, because Rob, you said you had some thoughts to me last night, is that Patreon is shifting how they are changing their payment system, basically. I'm just going to read this paragraph again from No One Makes a Living on Patreon over on the outline. While I was writing this article, Patreon made a change in how it does business. For years, creators received 90% of their monthly earnings. 5% went back to Patreon, the middleman, and the remaining 5% went to fees and taxes. This changed in an email sent to creators this week, announcing that creators would take home exactly 95% of every pledge with no additional fees, quote unquote. While none of it seems like great news for Patreon, while it seems like great news for Patreon's creators, the response was livid. The fee change comes at a cost to the site's patrons, and indirectly to its creators, who will get a higher percentage of donations, but of a smaller dollar amount, like overall. Patreon is making up the lost 5% fee on creators by charging patrons an additional 2.9% plus another 35 cents on each transaction. This means that smaller donors will be hit the hardest. So basically, if you're supporting five different creators at a dollar or two, you're getting hit with that 35-cent transaction on each one. And so I'm just kind of interested both in this specific thing, but also just like crowdfunding in general, what the place of kind of direct to consumer subscription based stuff is in games, in the games industry, in games journalism, in your own lives as readers and viewers of video content, and just like what's the future look like? That's anybody, please.
Well, the
give me guidance. Let me know that there will be a tomorrow.
I mean, I think what's really concerning about something like this is it's clearly meant to not really affect people running larger Patreons to a large extent. Like, it's probably good news if you're running a large scale Patreon, especially because Patreon, like a lot of things, most of your successful Patreon programs or campaigns are probably largely funded by a fairly small subset of patrons. This is like, at least this is my experience. Like with Three Moves Ahead is on Patreon. I've talked to other people who've seen similar models. Like, you know, some people have a little more disposable income or are just like, you know, mega boosters and right. contribute significantly more than, quite frankly, one would reasonably expect someone to value a value workout, which is really heartening to see, and a little bit intimidating as well. But a lot of Patreons are making the majority of their money off of like slightly higher value patrons. However, the majority of your patrons are going to be people making small pledges, right? People treating Patreon as a tip jar. And what's concerning here is it's Patreon, to be cynical about this, it looks and feels like Patreon seeing a way to skin those people for fees without pissing off the creatives that sort of make the platform useful in the first place.
Right.
And so it's going to be those people making small pledges who, yeah, they're going to see this in their bottom line. Like, their small pledge just became significantly more expensive. The dollar they pledged just turned into, like, what, $1.35? $1.46?
At least $1.35, because it's a $35, right. a 35 cent fee plus the taxes, right?
Right. So those people are going to see that pledge cost increase quite a bit.
Right.
It's not the creators are not going to see that quite as much. But what we're already seeing, and I'm already starting to get a lot of emails from people who back the Three Moves Ahead Patreon. I'm getting these really upsetting emails, people apologizing for not being right. able to send me their like $6, $12, $15 a year. Because they just don't love this fee and they feel bad about like pulling support, but you know, them's the breaks. And I don't fault those people at all. This right. is bullshit. It is Patreon choosing to exploit that class of donors, sort of seeing an arbitrage opportunity within their business model and sort of futzing with the math so that small donors who do make the majority of patrons on Patreon become a profit driver. Right. Instead of kind like, you know, instead of probably from Patreon's point of view, a less interesting driver of profit, not quite a nullity, but not a place you can pick up a lot of revenue really quickly via transaction fees.
Or they're willing to lose all of those lower dollar right. people in the exodus, knowing that the larger creators keep a higher percentage theoretically of what they're raising through Patreon. And so, yes, you'll piss off a lot of small creators that rely on smaller donors, but in the grand scheme of what they're trying to accomplish financially, they may put on a face that says, oh, we're trying to make work for everyone, but as they're trying to, you know, raise capital, which we shouldn't forget is part of this, like, they didn't say that, but they're like Patreon has been in currently like looking around for like larger evaluations. And yep. so it wouldn't be shocking if like this was part of a move. Like Patreon doesn't make much money. Like I was reading some analysis of their financials, like, but, you know, because they're a relatively, you know, smaller service that makes all of their money on transactions in the same way that you go to Ticketmaster and like they charge you a quote unquote convenience fee. Like this is just how mm-hmm. how they make their money, because they just host people who raise money from other people. And I think they're probably making a calculation that I think is cold-hearted and bad and shitty, but like maybe it is towards their larger aims. It's that shitty because it doesn't help the people that I feel like Patreon is there for. And Patreon is like a weird ecosystem to begin with because folks rightfully get upset that like there's a certain group of people that make a lot of money on Patreon and a lot of people that don't. I've always made the argument that those people existing on Patreon like hopefully has like, you know, not to say trickle down economics, but the hope is like a larger group of people on Patreon maybe comes across other people. I don't know what the percentage of like actual trickle down is there, but Patreon's always
in other words, the point you're making is that like if a large artist goes on Patreon, the hope is to then bring people into an ecosystem. Now they have an account, and maybe they do also look around and see small projects. And ideally, maybe the patron even uses the platform to shout out other things that they love on Patreon that people can go support and like blah 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 blah.
Yeah, the way there was some Kickstarters that would make a lot of money. There was like sometimes they would say like, hey, and if we go over X amount, we're going to donate some percentage to another Kickstarter. Like that was something that happened for a little while on that service. Yeah. So ideally, that's how it works. That's not necessarily how it works in practice. And they've never released any. They don't have no reason to release statistics on whether that actually trickles down in that way. But yeah, I don't. This seems bad to all. Like I don't. I've seen no. No one seems happy about this. I haven't seen reactions from like the biggest. Patrons, you know, the biggest folks on Patreon. I think, you know, like Chat About Trap House, the far left podcast, I think makes like the most openly amount of money on Patreon. And then there's a YouTuber commentator whose name I'm forgetting. It's mentioned in Brent's piece.
I think it's like Nerd something, right?
Well, there's that, and there's another guy. Anyway, like, there's a way in Patreon where you can actually lock how much you're not publicly show how much you're making. It only shows your patrons, but you have people that are making...
Oh, it's Phil DeFranco. It's Philly D. Of course it's Philly D.
Philly D.
Remember YouTube? Remember YouTube? And
it
like...
sounds like a guy from Jersey Shore, if I'm being totally honest. This seems like a... I don't know what this means for the platform long term, but the consensus I've seen from folks that on Patreon that make like decent money, that aren't in the, you know, the 30, 40, 50, 60,000 range, but are making anywhere between... you know, $2,000 and $10,000 per month. Like, I don't know if their drop off is going to kill their ability to do the work they want to do, but it is having a negative impact almost immediately in a way that I think will sour people on the, or could potentially sour people on the platform long term.
Yeah. I think what Patrick's trying to say is this is the perfect parallel for tax reform.
Why is that, Jeff? What's the case you're trying to make here? Huh?
Oh, no, nothing at all. It has nothing to do with, like, the people at the top benefiting at all. I think, and you kind of alluded to this when we were talking a little before about how there seems like something was done, and even what to jump on top of what Rob said a few minutes ago, how there was sort of like this void where maybe money was getting left on the table. And I don't know if it was, you know, Patreon internally or... some sort of firm or agency or whatever you want to call it that maybe influenced this decision or however it was, you know, arrived at. It feels like the thing that got overlooked was maybe the human element of the entire thing.
Yeah.
And that's something that it, you know, that is a variable that doesn't have an actual number attached to it. And I think that is really... You know, and that's what's manifested from the reaction to it, right? That's what's floated to the surface, and I think that was something that was obviously severely overlooked.
I mean, they could have. Oh, go ahead, Austin.
Well, I was just going to say very briefly that like the thing here too is that it kind of gets at one of the weird contradictions inside of Patreon already, which is like this is a business that is trying to make money, but the thing that makes people resonate with it is that it is a way for them to support artists and creators that they like, which is often a very mushy, like feelings forward thing where like the last thing you want to be thinking about when you're like, oh, I don't really have it, but I want to toss someone a couple bucks this month is... the money side of it and like feeling like you're being ripped off or feeling like anybody involved is getting ripped off. Like everyone wants to support the everyone understands that like the business costs money to operate, but that's not how any of this was framed. None of this was framed as like, well, we're raising fees because blah, blah, blah. It was all like so openly. It was like the spin was so obvious. It was so clear that they were spinning something that was hurting the people who were kind of in their own lives giving the most, even though the dollar amount wasn't the most. The sort of like the reach that they were making was the most, and everyone involved, like especially because like again, it's a bunch of people who like make podcasts or make music or do, you know, various artistic pursuits. Like a lot of us have been fucking kicking and screaming just to get through the week, you know. Like when I first started, speaking from a point of experience, I have a Patreon. I run Friends at the Table, which is an actual play podcast. We play tabletop role-playing games and we record it. We release episodes every week. And we started the Patreon back in June or in the summer, and we were thrilled to receive a lot of support from our fans. And we know that, and part of the reason that we set up our reward spread is that we know that there are people who don't have it, because a lot of us either don't have it now or have not had it in the past. Like when I started Friends at the Table, I was making $15,000 a year as a teaching assistant. I was not making, and a freelancer. Like I wasn't breaking $17,000 like for years in a row. I'm like, I don't know. I got this, you know, blue snowball mic. I could do a podcast now. And so I remember even then I'd be like, okay, I can give like $1 a month to these three Patreons I really like. It was like, you know, do you remember Patrick, that game? Fucking something world. You peed on people. It was very good. I can picture it so clearly. Curse world? No. Piss world? No.
If I do a Google search for games where you pee on people, I don't like you what wrote I'm going to get.
Games where you pee on people. Pilgrims. Remember there were pilgrims involved? I'm so mad that I don't remember
all,
this.
It's all Portal 2 or Postal 2.
Portal 2. I don't fucking remember the name of that game.
Anyway.
It's going to kill me. I still support her on Patreon, but I was like, oh, she's making weird, cool art games. That means that I should Crypt World is really good. Crypt World is great. So it's like, oh, I'm making $15,000 a year, but I'm still going to try to give $12 a year to Lilith, who made Crypt World, which is a really interesting,
yes,
like independent alternative game, like brilliant, really funny. And a lot of our supporters, a lot of Friends of the Table supporters are in the same position. And so it's so fucking frustrating. And I don't think that Patreon accounted for the fact that so many of the creators could empathize so clearly with their patrons. Like, it's not easy to be like, oh, there's only 100 of you paying $1 a month, so I don't even care. Like, no, of course we care. And it just seems like a disconnect between the sort of business brain and the creative heart of what Patreon is.
And they should have allowed different creators to opt out.
Right.
Like
they should have allowed the fees.
Yeah, they should have said, look, we're changing this, generally speaking, but that if a creator would like to if they wanted to change it, and then maybe that meant that some creators were going to make less. Like, I don't, like, maybe that was the trade-off. It's like the creator makes more, and then the people supporting them have to pay a little bit more, give an option to this, because I think there would have been a lot of people, especially the people that are making, you know, in the thousands, were, yes, I'm just throwing a spitball, but $200 a month, like, isn't, like, to keep those people is more important to eat that 200 than to create, a toxic atmosphere where people with not a lot of money don't feel like they can participate in either supporting people or getting access to some of the cool stuff that you, like, that's also, right, like, Patreon is not just about, supporting people financially. It's often a thing you like, you get cool shit because you give a dollar or some amount and you,
exactly,
get behind the scenes things, or you get them early, or you get them without ads. And so they're like, you are placing a larger financial burden on people who not only want to like help people make things that capitalism and the market does not explicitly support in a way that people can put their full-time effort into. And then you're also excluding them from the ability to like get access to those things. You're encouraging them to then go like pirate those things from other places or not see it at all. And it's just bad all around. It's a real bummer for a service that, by and large, its problems aside, has done a lot of good for a lot of people that wouldn't be able to do those things otherwise. Like, even in Brent's article, which, like, you know, sort of like, you know, investigates some of the problems with looking at Patreon as a way of, like, being a full-time career for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Like, he highlights stories where, like, there was a woman that I think she, like, works at a coffee shop, and she's an artist, and she does comics on the side, and her Patreon doesn't make that much money, but over the course of, like, 6 months, it let her buy, like, a nice tablet and a pen because she could do better comics. So, like, for some people, they don't view Patreon as a way to do full-time career. It's a way to, like, do a hobby or do something you'd eventually like to be your full-time thing, and maybe it allows you to get some resources to build in that direction, especially for people that are in, you know, their like early 20s or coming out of college with debt and things like that. There's all sorts of reasons why small-time Patreons are really useful for a lot of people in a lot of different ways. And I have no idea how Drip is going to work. I thought it was a bad footing to start out with, just like a bunch of elite creators that could make money. I mean, it makes sense, like, from a, you know, a perspective to draw attention to it, but I don't know that it necessarily signals, like, we're here for the little guy, when it's like like huge people with an audience that are going to have no problem raising X amount of funds on a service like that.
Or any
people
service,
that are,
right.
are trotted out. Also, Drip's a bad name. I don't like
Drip's a bad name. It's a bad name.
It sounds like something that's coming out of my butthole, not like something that I'm going to fuel, fund someone's
Is your butthole okay, Patrick?
As far as I know, but, you know. You gotta get everything checked out once a
butthole
year.
Check.
You should
quick.
Maybe investigate that if that's what resonated with you about a Drip platform.
Can we get quick?
Can we get a GoFundMe right going to make sure Patrick's butthole is okay, please?
So just a quick thing though. There's something I don't fully get because we haven't seen this in practice yet. They haven't switched over like my last
it's coming on the
pay
18th,
cycle.
I think right.
Yeah. So as I understand it, prior to this, you'd see, like, a monthly charge from Patreon, and then your different pledges would go to the various, like, buckets, correct?
Yeah, uh-huh.
As I understand it now, you're going to get all these different charges from Patreon.
Yes.
Depending on what you're running. To the point where, like, I can actually start to see why maybe Patreon is charging a fee, because now they're also paying probably, like, if it's anything like what retail has to deal with, like credit card transactions also involve a fee.
Someone came out yesterday with the math, and it was wrong at first because they thought that Patreon was taking a certain amount from each thing. Who's really winning in this is PayPal, who is getting a ton on the extra transaction fees. A lot of this, so Patreon ran an update last night that was like, meant to be like, oh, everybody here, we're going to be more transparent and show you more about why we're making the decisions we're making. And it was not really a useful one. But the thing that it did explain is that what they're trying to bring going into 2018 is, instead of it being, all right, so you say you want to go support a Patreon. Let's say we launched right now a Patreon for Waypoint Radio. If you wanted to come support us right now, you would come pledge, and then, or this time last month, you would come and pledge. You wouldn't get paid. You wouldn't get charged right away. You'd get charged on the first of the next month. That's because we release. That's if you supported us monthly. If we also said, well, or you could support us per episode we put out, then you would get charged each time we put out an episode. So that's
twice
how things
week.
Are. Right, twice a week. You'd get charged twice a week. $5 an episode. It's you know, you want to fucking support us or not. We're trying to make art here.
Are we?
Yeah, butthole Drip. Now,
I'm going to write that down. That's the episode title. Can that go through? Will that get through iTunes filters?
I mean,
we're about to find out.
Put it on mature. But what they want to go to, and they said that they're like, now what we heard from all of our creators again and again is what we want, what they wanted was a monthly subscription where you get charged up front. You get paid every month, but as soon as someone says that they're pledging to you, then they're also paying you for that month. And they're like, well, we can't do that because what if someone pledges on the 28th and then they're going to get charged on the 28th and then also get charged on the 1st? That you can't. I don't know how to deal with that. So instead, we're going to go to a monthly anniversary model. So if you start on the 28th, you get charged on the 28th. And so now they've put out this graph that is like, this is what Patreon will look like, a Patreon-like charge schedule looks like in the future. And it just like, this is the thing that's supposed to calm people's nerves. Like, oh, this is why it happens. And it's just the word fee 7 times because you're getting hit on every new per post pledge. And you're now not just getting hit with one fee at the beginning of every month. You're getting hit with a fee on each on each monthly anniversary transaction. So if you supported somebody on the 8th, you get a fee there. If you supported somebody on the 13th, you get another fee there. If you supported someone on the 20th, you get another fee there, because those are all unique individual transactions. And, like, I don't know their data. I believe them that lots of people are like, oh, could you make it so that you charge the guy when he says he wants to support me? He says he wants to support me. Take the money from him then instead of waiting until the 1st. I'm trying to pay my rent. I get it. But I don't actually think that this was a solution that solves that problem in a human way, because it just, anytime you end up with, we're going to run 8 different things instead of the 1 at the beginning of the month, it just, like, it just seems, it feels like someone is being ripped off, and that's just not a good feeling to have, ever. And it's just like, control your messaging on it, control your optics, be very clear and upfront about a change like this, and it has to make ordinary sense. Like, it has to make sense to both creators who are making $300 a month, creators who are making $3,000 a month, creators who are making $30,000 a month, and all of the various people who support all of those creators who you know, donate a huge range of money. And, like, this explanation just did not do it for me at all. I'm frustrated is the thing. I'm frustrated is the thing, and it's not the... I think the thing that's, one of the things that's interesting here is it's making me remember, do you remember when Oculus got bought by Facebook?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For how much money? Does anyone remember offhand?
$40 billion.
Was it 40 B?
No, it was like 2.
Oh, it was 2. That's still 2 a lot
billion?
Of money.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was some backlash among early Kickstarter backers of the Oculus who felt like, hey, wait a second. You wouldn't be here without my money. My money was part of what got you here.
Oh, right. They were kind of shareholders in some sense.
Right. And that was like one of those early moments of like, nah, Kickstarter is not that. Kickstarter is, you're gifting the money. Mm-hmm. You're going to be given something back in exchange for that, but you're not an investor. You don't have equity. And I remember part of what I saw in the responses, I think I even gave a quote about this to, like, I want to say, or some writer somewhere, this is going to kill me. I don't know. Whatever. A tech writer somewhere. That, like, one of the things I saw at the time among responders was, like, this sudden realization, not only that Kickstarter wasn't an investment platform, but this disconnect that we had. Oh, we thought that this was a way. They'd seen what, like, collective financial action could look like. They'd seen a world in which, like, oh, what if we could all just pull our money and get a swimming pool? What if we could all just pull our money and get what we want with our taxes?
I want a swimming pool.
Right. And so, like, what if you and everybody in your community were like, oh, we'll put all our money together and put together a swimming pool for the neighborhood? And, like, that's what taxes are supposed to do, is, like, provide for people in that big way. And then what Kickstarter showed was, like, oh, we can do that for, like, stupid watches that we don't want at all 3 months later. We can do that with people who aren't in our neighborhoods. We can do that with people all... Hey, you know what? There aren't enough people in New York and Los Angeles who want to buy a new, whatever, adventure game. What was, like, one of the early... Like, a new Wasteland, right? Like, there aren't enough people in major markets to buy a new Wasteland. Very obviously. The numbers don't show it. But there are enough people all around the world, all said across everything, to maybe want a new Wasteland. And if we can get their money ahead of time so that we can invest it and it can start making money while we're making the game, then we could pull it off. And, like, there was something really powerful about seeing that sort of collective financial action, like, work. And then that Kickstarter thing, I think, for me at least, was, like, a really clear illustration of what the limits of that collective financial action were in the current model. And this seems to be a similar thing, which is like, oh, no. Remember, this is business first. This is not arts funding. This is not, like, the New Deal, but for podcasts and gaming. Like, this is a business model. They're middlemen. They want to make a profit, and they want to be acquired for way more money than what they're bringing in right now. And I think that can be jarring in this, like, even, like, I'm not even saying that this specific thought pattern goes through anybody's head, but that disconnect is very emotional between, like, this is a thing that I do for passion and love versus this is money. And those two things are often really diametrically opposed.
Yeah, but I think, like, every, you know, I think you have to really focus on the fact that these are businesses. Right. And, I mean, even if it is playing devil's advocate a little bit, I think you have to understand that it is not a charity situation, right? Mm-hmm. It is not, that is not what these, you know, this is not like a subsidized, like, artist program in some, you know, other country around the world. This is
that we don't have here anymore because we've gotten rid of that. That's
which is why I've made sure to note that it was a foreign policy that would probably be affecting. I don't know if this was the way it was from the get-go. Would it have taken off in the way it did? I don't know, but I think the biggest problem, like you said, is the emotional attachment that both creators and patrons have with a thing like this. And I haven't read anything that proposes. I mean, I realize the creators eating that original fee. I think that's a good idea for them to be able to choose that. Mm-hmm. But I haven't seen anything else that has been a very convincing, superior sort of way in which they do this.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe we can talk about what comes next, or like what the future of this is after we take a quick break. About 35 minutes in now, so we'll take a break. Put an ad break in here so that I can say something about a product.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
And we're back. I probably just said something about some sort of electronic...
I can't wait to buy that.
Box. Yeah, I love it. Love to spend... Anyway, more about talking about the future of advertising and money in media. I guess here's my question for you, Jeff. You've been in this industry for how long? How long have you been writing about technology and games and doing videos? All right.
10 years.
10 years. That's a lot of experience. You've seen a lot of changes.
Yes.
Where do you see this sort of thing, this sort of subscription-based Patreon, Kickstarter, like crowdfunded, like distributed funding thing, fitting in the next few years? Is it still just going to be this sort of niche thing, or do you think when can I subscribe to CNET?
It's called CBS All Access.
There it is.
And
I can watch every Star Trek episode?
Every Star Trek. We just announced Twilight Zone is coming back.
Oh, sick.
With Jordan Peele.
Yeah, that's
a
big deal.
That's
a big
deal.
About
producing,
that,
producing it anyway.
That's fine. Yeah, fine. That's cool.
I'll watch that.
Yeah.
You'll watch that. You'll pay for that, maybe?
Bazinga.
I'll find, it's just my mom's sign up for CBS All Access.
Hell yeah. Keep it in the family.
I don't know. We used to talk about this where, you know, anything was possible. And now we have to talk about this colored with what the internet's going to look like in 6 months.
What is the internet going to look like in 6 months?
I don't know. Probably more expensive.
What's the world going to look like in 6 months?
Don't ask questions that there are no answers to. I don't know. You know, I think a lot of net neutrality concerns are a very valid thing to insert into the equation now. I think, it seems that a lot of media companies are finding success with offloading their normal programming to a subscription-based service. So I think you will see that trend continue. I think when it comes to advertising, and, you know, we talked about this a little bit at the top, but when it comes to advertising, I think things will get way more, even more targeted and more surgical than they've ever been before, because I still think, and I would imagine most people in advertising would agree with this, is that they still, believe it or not, are not granularly targeted enough. And there's still huge sort of like catch-all campaigns that happen that are not proving to be as effective as maybe perhaps they could be. Now, you can like resist as much as you want, but I believe that is how all of us speaking on this call make money. So, it's I think the future of that, however creepy or ugly it does look, I think that is going to be a main component to where this moves. For the crowdfunding stuff, you know, I don't know. I still think we're way in the infancy of that kind of revolution, but you know, I think we're learning quickly what not to do.
Wait, what's your list of things not to do?
Well,
slide that over the table so I know if I've done any of them.
No, you haven't done any of them. I mean, okay. you're not a YouTube, and you're not.
I mean,
you're not.
I guess I'm not a YouTube. You know,
but like, can I be a YouTube?
Be a YouTube. Go crazy.
YouTube seems like it's doing all right. I should get into that. I should create a video hosting platform. Here's the thing with like increasingly targeted ads. It kind of just feels like advertising, the more we learn about advertising efficacy, the less impressive it gets. And what's changed in the last 20 years is we can actually start to measure that maybe a little more accurately. And like the Russian army, like retreating deeper into deeper into the heartland before Napoleon, like with every stage, like, okay, well, this didn't work.
Yeah.
We'll do this other thing instead.
Right.
And that one's going to work. This is the advertising that's going to be good. Like, yeah, those newspaper ads didn't, like, yeah, you didn't see the returns. Fine. Banner ads. That's the new thing. Everyone's online. People are going to love their banner ads. That didn't work. Referral ads. Referral links. That'll be the one. And with each stage, like, there's a period of adjustment. And then it turns out, like, that you can measure that this new form of advertising is also pretty much useless for like controlling consumer behavior. And so now you need yet a more like specialized one. And that one's going to be the silver bullet. And I like,
and
maybe at
is.
A certain point. Yeah. Maybe at a certain point, it does get inside your head to the point where advertising basically is like a commerce driven Jeeves who shows up at your slightest whim and is like, I know exactly what you need right now. Just give me your credit card and purchase this thing immediately.
Hey, just turn it over. Just give me your wallet.
Yeah.
I'm going to hook you up. Trust me.
Yeah.
Yo, do you like mixtapes?
Maybe like there's an end game where that works. But my suspicion is that it's always going to be disappointing. And the winner at each stage is going to be Google and Facebook, who continue to consolidate the advertising, you know, continue to consolidate
platform.
A greater share of the advertising pie. Under their control, while also telling people what kind of content to generate to
which,
sort of service.
Which changes every other day. The like what does well on Facebook changes. Are you in those meetings, Jeff? Do y'all have like SEO meetings and like best packaging style stuff at this point?
Sure.
It's wild because I think about what I was told by the Vice crew that like does all that stuff when I first started in July of last year versus what we're told now. Sorry, people are mad outside.
They just heard about this page.
Is that game Bloodborne 2 or is it a new Tenchu game?
I think it's a what if it's a
what if it's Shadow Tower?
Shadow Tower 2. Yeah, that's the shadow. The word shadow came. Okay. Fuck was I even? Oh, when I first started, they were like, oh, make sure that you have questions in your headlines. Make sure that you have, stories where these photos do well. This sort of photo does well. Versus now, it's like no questions in the headlines,
yeah.
And make sure there's always a person. Every header image should have a person in it. People do well. I want a face. God damn it, that's not how the people advice social team talk. I want to be clear, but like there is that sort of like that's how Facebook's algorithm works. Like Facebook's algorithm is not very personable.
You would in the one thing I've learned in 10 years of doing this, the one thing you would be good to not have is a long memory.
Yes,
100%. Like, don't remember what you did 4 years ago that was not trendy back then, but is super trendy now. Like, don't hold that grudge because the shit's just going to come back again. And you know, a lot of it is chasing the dragon, man. And Rob's completely right. Like, it will continue to change forever. And again, like, I have to say, I agree. I don't think it's a very healthy, I don't think it's very healthy in terms of parity for there to be, you know, a massively... a controlling sort of monster behind the wheel of the whole thing that, like, you know, is like eating its own tail in a way. But, you know, the face of advertising and the face of the content that drives it is changing and won't really stop because there's maybe only two things that maybe work that have worked in 20 years on the internet. And you know, everything else is sort of just, can we invent something new?
Right. Can we, or at the very least, can we convince our investors that we are in the process of inventing something new for long enough that they don't turn off the faucet? You right. know, like, we I got mean, it, look, we got it, trust us, the time is hit.
It feels like for the last 2 years, it's sort of been like, what can we do? How far can we push the line before people just throw their computers out the window?
Yeah.
Like, can we keep poking them inside this cage? Oh, no, they'll read that too. Okay, well, keep going.
Well, go ahead, Rob.
Well, no, and I think in addition to this, there's another element of, I don't know, it's like a form of survivorship bias, right? Where people keep telling you, well, this is the formula that works. This is what gets response. This is what a website needs to look like in order to be sustainable. And in general, like, with at every turn, it feels like the experience of consuming media on the web gets a little bit worse. Almost, you know, it doesn't matter what kind of media. It just all gets a little more in your face and a little less convenient. And over time, it does kind of feel like you're slowly ingesting poison to an extent, where you are turning off your audience over time, and the people you're increasingly marketing to are the people who are willing to put up with all of that shit in order to consume that content. But what becomes invisible is the people who just kind of pieced out after a certain point. They
right.
either because but of your content strategy.
Those are the $1 patrons. Those are the $1 patrons. Yeah. Who gives a fuck? Like, I don't, like, not me saying that. That's like the people behind the people in suits saying, like, I don't care about the 500 people who don't enjoy the ad experience so much that they run ad block or they won't come to the site. I care about the 10,000 people who are going to come, the 10 million people who are going to come, like, regardless, because they read a funny headline. Like, that is the MO, and it can be frustrating, because I think when you're in this business, you are one of the 100 $1 patrons in the sense of, like, I care about yeah. the experience. Like that Medium article that I quoted from, Medium or not Medium, sorry, that Outline article, The Outline is, like, one of the most gorgeous sites on the internet, and they have a very unique subscription advertising system of just, like, having very unique, very custom-made ads built into every article on the site. Like, they all have very, like, smooth animation, very, like, classy vibes. Like, nothing is very, like, it doesn't pop up in your face. There's no auto-playing, you know, video advertisements. It feels very custom-made. But, like, I don't know if this is the thing that lasts for the next year and a half or if this is a thing that lasts for the next 5 years. I'm hoping that that this model works and that we see more of it. I guess, like, some Medium sites also did this, right, where, like, at the top it would say, what was the sports site that was just, like, brought to you by...
The Ringer did that.
Yes,
probably the most ambitious, like, collaboration. And then they ditched it, like, a couple of months ago.
Right, like, they just ditched it, exactly. But for the first, you know, for the first little while there, after they launched, it was just, like, at the top of every page, it just said, like, The Ringer is brought to you by Bud Light. And it was just on Medium. It is no longer on Medium either, right?
Well, Medium had a difficult time sort of, like, pivoting to being profitable as opposed to just, like, making an easy place for your blogs to look nice.
Which is,
I feel like a lot of sites did this, though, like, and not to take anything away from the Outline, obviously.
No, totally.
I mean, we talked before we started how cool of a looking site we thought it was, but I would, and again, I'm just sort of speculating here, but I would assume that this would not be, you know, paying all the bills. I think, you know, it is
where are they getting
cool
money from? Do you think they just have investment?
I would imagine the majority of it is investment.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't, right? Like,
yeah, it's a big team.
This
McAllen
ad we're looking at is super dope. It's real slick, but, like, I don't think it's putting the whole thing in the black.
right. Or, like, I think that's the case that their ad team is probably making is this is not like advertisement on other sites. This is a premium. The thing that I've learned in the last year of running a website is that when you have something where you can say, oh, this is special, that, like, will tick a box with a potential advertiser, but it will not – there's a cap on all of that shit. Like, we have a very loyal readership. The people who support Waypoint, the people who listen to this, are fantastic. They show us tons of support. They support us by talking to us on social media. They come to our forums. They're, like – and all that is incredible. And the dream, I think, as a reader, and this is kind of what I always assumed before I was, like, in these meetings, was like, oh, so if you have really loyal, you know, fans, then the ads are going to be worth way, way, way more because you could just say, like, look at how loyal our fans are. And that's true, but only to a point. There's a point at which what you get is like, yeah, we get it, they're loyal. And you go, no. They're not 5% loyal. They're 50% loyal. And like, yeah, no, we checked the loyalty box, bud. I don't care if they're 5,000% loyal. There's a point at which it doesn't matter. They're not going to click on our ads. Like, some small percentage of them are going to be hit by this ad, and that's all we care about. It doesn't matter how loyal they are anymore. And I bet that that's the same thing with this, the outline style of like, oh, no, you don't get it. Like, there is one ad on the page, it's yours. I'm like, okay, yeah.
Are you loyal enough to not put on ad block?
That's the question, exactly.
Probably not.
Probably not.
Because you know what? If I'm not willing to do that sometimes,
absolutely,
this is my job.
Yep. I have one browser set up with ad block, and one, like, when I'm logged into my work account, I don't have ad block on. When I am on my personal account, I have ad block on with lots of sites greenlisted because I like their work. But like, even our own site sometimes we'll get like served an ad because someone served, you know, signed a deal somewhere where it was like, oh, it's going
to
be
better. It's better than it used to. It used to be us.
Certainly is.
There was a period where none of us kept our own website open in a tab all day because it would crash your browser over time.
So the product team works very hard. They have priorities often handed down to them from above. It's hard. The other thing here that is, I think, interesting for me, there's maybe two things. One is, I think I often fall into the trap of thinking about subscriptions as the way out. I think it's fair to say, and I've said this before, is like, of course we're thinking about subscriptions. Like, I get a tweet a lot that's like, have you ever considered doing subscriptions? Man, I've considered a lot of shit. Let me tell you.
You know you can do that?
Consideration is like a low bar. Like, we constantly are like, what else could we do? How do we, like, what other things could we think about? And so you think about a lot of things, and I think it's also fair to say, and I don't, like I've said this before, every media company is thinking about subscription model services, including us. My like weird nightmare is we fast forward 5 years, and you're in that meeting with the ad sales guy who's like, all right, we know that you have no ads for your subscribers, but what if we had ads for your subscribers, and then we could pay the we could have the advertisers pay us way more, and there's going to be a point at which, like, it's so easy to now imagine the world in which we go into this beautiful 5-year period or 10-year period where we go to direct-to-consumer subscription models and the sites get all uncluttered of ads and they're just beautiful and you're paying for what you're paying to directly to the people you love and respect and whose work you adore. And then like 10 years down the road, the money starts slipping into the red. And then someone says, well, the thing we could do is we could run this beer ad and like just even for your subscribers. And it's just like, I can see that future already. Like in this piece to Rob, your sort of timeline of what we thought worked only ever works until a point.
Well, and it's also like, I mean, thing with, you know, look at the dream of cable,
right?
You know,
right.
Cord cutting, where it's like, oh, it's gonna be great. I'm only gonna pay for what I want. Well, we've rapidly approached. It's not the future. It is very much the present, where by the time you pay for Amazon, Netflix, Hulu. You know, there'll be the Disney thing eventually if you want to get like Marvel shows. Like, by the time you add all that shit up, if you want like everything, you want to watch sports, okay, then you need like a PlayStation View or Vue or whatever that thing is called. So
Boo.
You can like
Parley Vue.
PlayStation Boo. Boo. You're paying more than you were when you had a cable. Boo. I wonder if that becomes part of it too, is that eventually it's like, you know, there's only so much money to go around even for people personally. And like on top of that, you have the initial problem of like, you can't make money off of people if people don't know who you are and they want to give you money. Like, that's like a larger existential problem of like, you know, how do new people get started? You know, you're not going to give money to someone you don't know is any good.
Yeah.
How do those people get started if they don't work for platforms where they can get noticed in the first place? And it becomes like increasingly individualized Patreons and backing services. Like, you end up backing horses you already know, because that makes sense. That's like a reasonable like risk assessment, but that then becomes far more complicated when it's like, just, you know, random writer wants to go on Patreon. Like, they're not going to make any money because why would you give them any money?
Well, and then those creators also don't have access to the resources that they might have at a publication, right? Like, when I was a freelance writer on Patreon, I didn't have a legal team. Like, I didn't have anyone who I could be like, I remember I wanted to write about Dragon Ball Xenoverse. And so I was like, all right, I'm going to email this company and see if I can get, like an early copy of this game. And I'd done that here or there, right, as a freelancer. But mostly as a freelancer, I'd gotten games assigned to me. So I didn't have contacts at Bandai Namco. I didn't have anybody who – I can go, like, oh, Patrick, do you have a contact at Bandai Namco? And what I definitely didn't have was, like, someone in the comms department to, like, try to get publicity for our work, right? Like, when we did the pieces on prison and games at Play in the Carceral State, we have a comms guy at Vice who have a whole comms team. It was not just one person, it was not just a guy. We had a couple of people who reached out to other publications and got our documentary into their hands, and we got, you know, the different articles to get circulation across a number of different outlets. And like, that support comes from being in an institution that has those extra resources and has that institutional memory and has the skill set and experience. And then it also, in our specific industry where we are receiving games to review, like, means that there's a degree of oversight, which means that, like, we make sure to go through the right steps to make sure that we're not, like, taking money to do positive coverage or to limit our coverage in certain ways. Like, there's a lot of ways in which I am confident that the work that we do has a lot of integrity. And I'm not throwing YouTubers under the bus. What I'm saying is I wish that they had those support structures also, because when you're young and when you are like, oh, I don't have a name yet, it can be really easy to agree to things or to be convinced by people who are very good at convincing you of something that what they're asking you to do is standard, is industry standard. It's like, oh, no, just let us fly you out to Rome to play the game for review, is like such an easy thing to want to believe has no baggage. If you are the young person who has a small but dedicated audience, maybe you're making $1,000 on Patreon every month, which is like, hey, that's real money, but it ain't like great money if you're living in a big city in America.
Well, also think of it this way, like, let's say I went on Patreon tomorrow and I made the equivalent of my salary.
Yes.
Well, actually, yep. I need to make more than the equivalent of my salary, because that doesn't pay for equipment, doesn't pay for health insurance.
Yep.
Like, it doesn't, like, your actually, you need to make, you need to make like one and a half. Yeah. Like, yep. Taxes are wild. What? Damn it. I got it. You're going to make me say this fucking word. I never said wild before. And I'm.
Think of the words you used to say instead of it, though. This is the thing.
I don't know what that world was, because now my world is
crazy.
Wild.
The thing that I don't say anymore is crazy.
Yeah,
I
say, no, that's true.
I say
that's
wild instead of crazy. So
insane is also,
yeah,
word.
Exactly. That's the problem, is what I need is like a second and third, because I've replaced insane, crazy, like other words with just wild. And
why'd you do that? Were you just like, I have to change it up?
Yeah, I just wanted to keep it fresh. No, I just like, yeah. I know too many people who are neurodivergent or who have mental illnesses who, like, I see them bristle when someone is like, yo, that shit is insane.
Right.
And it's like, I'm not,
I know what you
mean,
but it's just one of those, yes, like small things, sort of like, what do you say? Like, hey guys. And like, there's a woman in the room. And I'm not saying that because I'm trying to dismiss the women in the room. I'm just ingrained to say, hey guys.
100%. And so wild became my, like, my switch off. Ridiculous, I say.
Untamed.
Yo, this shit is untamed.
Feral. That's pretty good. Feral's not bad.
I like feral.
Feral. You know what? That Battlegrounds map today was fucking feral.
That Battlegrounds map was feral.
Fierce? Fierce is good.
Fierce is good. Fierce has likes.
Savage. Although HQ has ruined the word savage.
Yeah, and also savage has its own whole history.
Yeah. Uncultivated.
This shit is bemusing.
Agrestal? I've never used the word agrestal before. I don't even.
What?
Agrestal?
That's the guy who used to run.
Growing
to run
wild and cultivated fields.
The GIA, right? Agrestal?
It uses the word wild in the definition of a synonym for wild.
Yeah, you know.
Fuck you, Google Docs. Is that game Shadow Tower?
Wait, is it? Did they just drop it?
I don't know.
Okay.
That Death Stranding trailer was.
Can we just
wild.
Talk about? Okay, we've. Let's. I'm gonna. You know, I'm gonna
yeah,
make
let's
a.
Let's get onto this.
Let's talk about the fucking Game Awards last night. We've talked about the future of media. Let's talk about the future of games and the yesterday of games also. What do y'all think about the Game Awards?
You gotta give me some McDonald's, rah.
Hey, fuck the Oscars.
Oh my God.
All right. So, at what point Do you think Mads Mikkelsen is going to realize
that he's in,
and Norman Reedus, that they've wandered into a single white female situation? Like, there is, in fact, no game. Like they're just like wearing mocap suits and everything, and like reading lines and everything, and just hanging out with Hideo Kojima like all Hideo the time.
I think Norman Reedus seemed like, based on like what he said last night, where he was just like, I don't know, man, I'll do whatever the fuck this guy says. I think he is. I think he is there.
Yeah, 100%.
I think he has no idea what's. I mean, when he joked, it was not a joke when he said, "Can't wait to go online and have someone explain to me what we just watched."
Oh yeah,
I believe him 100%.
Oh, he's just along for the ride.
Yep. So yeah, wouldn't you checks,
be?
Right?
I'd be along for the. I barely even like a lot of Kojima's yep. games, and I would be along for the ride.
100%.
I bet a part of him is hoping this game never comes out. He's like, I just want to keep being a part of these wild ass bemusing trailers.
Hideo Kojima is like the Medici of Norman Reedus' life. He's like just a lifelong patron of the arts. I'm just like, yeah. I want to see you work. You and Mads work together.
This is going to be the David of Mpreg fan art.
I can't believe that baby was in him.
Did the God. Baby give like a thumbs up?
The baby gave a thumbs up.
He gave like a little like. You.
Yep.
I don't remember that part of my kid being born, but I don't know.
That didn't happen.
A lot. It was a stressful experience. Maybe I missed the thumbs up.
Inside to give you a little, way too clean too.
Yeah, the babies are dirty.
Yeah, that's not. Well, look, I don't think that's an accurate representation of how any of the reproductive process works.
Okay.
But it's sci-fi.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, yeah.
Exactly.
It's actually a utopian vision. Norman Reedus journeys across the stars. So that he can have a really antiseptically clean pregnancy experience. The other thing, and this gives you a little preview, and Austin, you and I need to talk about this. Toward the end of this year, I was going to say some very nice things about A Way Out, game that I was really excited for.
Uh-huh.
I have concerns.
Are you not still excited about that game because of last night?
I became less certain of the hands that the project currently resides in. I played A Way Out at E3. I think we talked about it a little bit on the podcast we did around there. It is a really cool experience, especially playing it with somebody else. There are a lot of fun ways for things to go like absurdly wrong in ways that you and your partner in crime will begin. Like, basically, if you ever watch like Midnight Run,
remind people what this game is in case they don't remember what A Way Out is, because it's kind of a generic name.
Yeah, so A Way Out is I think it's literally from the designer who made Brothers, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ferris, is it Joseph?
Joseph Ferris, I believe.
Yeah, Joseph Ferris. So it's another co-op game. It's a little bit like, the best way to describe it honestly is like a co-op David Cage game, in some ways, but a little more grounded.
That's a lot of baggage you're putting on that fucking game.
It is, Rob. but with better writing and acting.
Okay.
And hopefully a slightly better handle on like what makes a game fun to play beyond just like timed multiple choice quizzes. But the cool thing is, if you've ever watched like a heist movie or anything like that, where it's cross-cutting between different parts of the action,
right,
and like one protagonist is doing something and then another is involved in an equally pressing task, it all needs to come together or things are going to go horribly wrong. Now you can be sitting on the couch and it goes to split screen and you and your partner are basically like playing through that experience, right? Huh. Like, you're sort of keeping an eye on each other's screens, arguing about like what the other person's character should be doing. So like, if you're in the demo at E3, you're holding up a gas station, right? Like, okay, I need you to stand by the front door and keep a gun on all these customers. I'm gonna go rough up the guy at the counter. And then both of you are sort of involved in those different tasks, and how each of you perform is going to affect how the entire heist goes down.
Right.
And the entire game is going to be like this. And so, like, if you ever watched a movie like, Midnight Run, for instance, I would love to have a Midnight Run experience with Austin, for example. Like, I think we could, like, Austin's my Charles Grodin. I'm, of course, De Niro in that movie. And, just sort of, like, journeying this great land. and having adventures and, you know, working together. I was excited for this. It's about, you know, two guys bust out of prison. There's a little bit of, oh God, what is it? Is the movie called The Wild Ones?
That is a movie.
60s.
Yeah, there is a movie called The Wild Ones from the 60s.
Yeah, it's also a buddy break out of prison movie, right?
Yes. No, no, that's the one with, that's like a biker gang movie.
Okay. Still. Anyway, point is.
Okay, so why are you all freaked out now?
Because Joseph Farris had a moment on the stage last night where he, like, at the awards, they show trailers and invite creators and give them a little moment in the sun.
It's nice.
Yeah, usually it is. And Farris kind of decided to just go up there and start ad-libbing. And then, like, basically get really confrontational about... It wasn't even entirely clear what the thrust of his speech was, but it was basically really confrontational about... It was this really, like, games triumphalism.
Is the problem.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, that wasn't the problem.
And Keeley... It actually felt maybe it was really meta. It actually felt like a really awkward moment in A Way Out. Like, this is an encounter you could have in A Way Out. One person is Jeff Keighley,
right,
who's watching your partner, Joseph Farris, go completely off the rails, and you're just stuck in that moment.
And his whole bit was just like, fuck movies, fuck the Oscars. Right. Like, right. Games are so much better than movies. Like, beat my chest, I'm out here doing real shit.
EA's not that bad.
Oh,
actually,
God,
EA's not that bad.
I forgot about the EA part.
He basically, like, in a really bad way, attempted to say, like, his point clearly was to say, hey, the loot box stuff was not great, it was poorly handled, but they've basically just written me a check to go make a cool game, and corporations are complicated and capitalism is weird. Yeah. Like, that was, like, what he clearly meant to say. Instead, like, he said that, but as though you've been drinking for 8 hours, and then, like, it took you 5 minutes to get to the point, but you lost everyone along the way.
Yeah, that was like if, you know, you're at a wedding reception, and, you know, there's already been the speech, but then, like, towards the end of the day, towards the end of the party, someone else stands up and goes over to the DJ and goes, give me the microphone.
Actually.
This is too real.
Do you have more, Patrick?
No.
Have you
done
this?
No, I was just saying that's what someone says.
Oh, right, yeah. Actually, yeah, I knew them when they first got together. And like, uh-oh, what's Bill know? What does Bill remember?
Patrick didn't invite me to be part of the bridal party. I don't know what that's about. I mean, the grooms, look, I'm not one of those fucking groomsmen, but we're brothers. Anyway, point is...
We're brothers.
None of you would even be here if it wasn't for me.
You remember brothers? I made that. I made brothers. Yes.
I'm the left analog stick, and you're the right analog stick.
But now you're married. Now you're getting married, and he's
going
to be
just
the right
Rumble
analog stick. It was like a kind of a running thing, though, last night, was people addressing the various elephants in the room in gaming in a way that were not... There was, like, none of them landed.
The Rocket League... Or not Rocket League. It was... What was it? Was it Fortnite when they showed off a trailer for stuff like that?
Yeah.
The one time it did land for me was, like, I thought it was cool that the Xbox Fortnite, like, made a point to be like, hey, we want crossplay to be a thing in video games,
it's
bullshit that essentially that Sony is holding up the ability for, like, games to cross pollinate and multiplayer. Like, I thought that was actually, like, in terms of, like, a small
using
grandstand
platform,
of, like, something that, like, actually would help. Like, video games writ large, like, that would be a good thing for that to happen for video games. Like, I thought
that was cool.
Fine. I mean, those interviews as a whole were just, like, super awkward and, like, didn't really... Like, they should have been just scripted bits as opposed to, like, these off-the-cuff things where... I don't know. It was weird.
Bethesda ran an ad for single-player games and a sale that they're having, also, obviously.
$100,000 isn't going to get us single-player games, Bethesda. Like, sorry to report. Like, it was a nice gesture, but, like, it's not... $100,000 isn't going to make a new Star Wars Uncharted game.
It's not going to make a new Campo Santo game. Campo Santo, a friend of the show, announced in the Valley of the Gods their follow-up to Firewatch, which looks dope. But, like, that game isn't going to cost $100,000 is just not a lot. And also, you're Bethesda. Like, y'all got Skyrim money.
Yeah, you could have easily donated like $10 million and actually funded a game right. as opposed to giving $100,000 to the ESA, a company who right, has like a decidedly pro-Trump agenda in 2017. So, you know, maybe maybe rethink that proposition a little bit. Like, I understood the gesture, but it was misguided in some ways that made it not land.
Right, especially because if one of the things the ESA could find itself doing in the near future is spending money to lobby against laws that would regulate loot boxes. Like, literally the thing that they're doing is giving
money going to happen,
to the company, 100%. To the organization that will make it possible for there to continue being these specific multiplayer games built around loot boxes. So, yeah, just a wild.
It would have been okay if they were just like, "We're gonna hold on to this money because we're not, we're not actually entirely sure where the safe place to put it is."
Right. We launched a bunch of games that people loved, but not enough of you. A lot of you didn't buy our games this year.
If you know what Bethesda should do with this $100,000, you can write in. We've launched a Twitter account, yeah. Bethesda's 100,000.
But if I'm Keely, I woke up this morning feeling all right because, you know, that's when you know you've made it as an award show where people are using it to exploit their personal socio and political agenda.
It feels a little more like MTV like movie awards than it does like this like idea of whole pitching as the Oscars. And I like Jeff and I admire what he's trying to do, but like when there are eBay commercials in between, when the longest segment of the night is a trailer for a game that Lord knows when it is coming out. Is Death Stranding coming out in 2018? No. Like, is that coming out in 2019?
No.
Maybe fall 2019.
But it's announced fall 2019 pushes to winter 2020.
Spring 2020. Yeah. You're probably right. And when the longest thing of the night is probably like that, or maybe the package they did. Was it for Carol? I'm getting her name wrong.
Oh, the River Raid developer, Atari. Carol.
Yeah, which was good.
Shaw?
That thing was
Sharp Shaw.
Carol Shaw.
Shaw's right.
But that Death Stranding, I think, was probably the longest sort of like individual bit of the evening. And then I think almost immediately after that, Keely goes up on stage and is like, "Best strategy game, like Mario and Rabbids, like best blah blah." Like, he just fucking burned through five different awards, and it's like, I get that. I get it. I'm sure coming up with the financing for that like is a really complicated endeavor, and it's different than things like the Oscars, which are like privately financed. And like, I don't, clearly they're able to do it in a way where they don't have to do these things. But I think, by and large, like, Keely has actually made like a better award show as it's gone along. If you just ignore all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. But apparently, like, the award, like, after the awards were over, like the post show where like everyone just went to get drinks was in like a Mick Cafe.
Yeah,
like, it was like sponsor. Like, that's gross, dude. Like, it's McDonald's. Like, that, like, that plays into like the worst parts of like the most cynical way to view like gamers and like gamer culture in a way that like bums me out. Like, and that's not even necessarily like a shade at McDonald's. Like, I've been there at 2 a.m. McDonald's has its place. It's cheap, but I don't know. Stuff like that bothered me. The commercialism, I understand why it's there. The way it was presented and packaged often got on my nerves as it went along, where it's like the trailers and the eBay stuff and the Uber Eats and McDonald's, like, it was just a lot. Even though the stuff that, if you removed it, I think all of that stuff has gotten way better. Like, doing the Atari thing.
100%. The Carol Shaw bit was legitimately, like,
I wanted more of that. Like, even just a couple more things like that. The one that they tried to do, the Andrew House thing with PlayStation, I was like, is this dude out here to give himself an award? Like, I'm not sure what's – they set it up wrong. Like, they didn't make clear like what exactly was happening. And then when I was looking on Twitter, it's like, okay, I'm not alone. Like, no one else quite understands what we're doing here. Also, why are we celebrating so many executives? Like, I get it. Executives pull the strings, and like, there's a reason that like producers will go up sometimes at like the Oscars and like accept those awards, but come on.
Yeah.
Like, there are way too many executives up here on stage that we're patting on the back,
because
the executives are the people that you end up interviewing. So I think there's a little bit of a cycle there where it's like, if you're like a gaming reporter, you interview a lot of executives, and then that's who you know.
Right.
And then a lot of these executives appear on the stage, and that part was sort of
weird. Right. So that part specifically made me think that the ratio was flipped, right? Like, I have no problem giving Andrew House his due. He's been in the industry for a long time. It's you know, clearly a moment of change and an era of change in Sony with him changing. He's leaving at the end of the year, right? Like, he's actually stepping away. I get it. But that he was then throwing to Game for Impact, which is a kind of nebulous award that they've never really explained in a way that has ever felt consistent with who the nominees and winners are. And imagine if they'd swapped the amount of times those two things had and the amount of production values. Like, they knew who was going to win that award. Or maybe they didn't. I guess it was voted, right? But like, maybe Games for Change shouldn't be a voted award. Maybe that should be something that they give an award to and they produce a nice package for and put together. And then they show that package. The people, the winners in the audience have no idea that like that package is coming. So they've shot them for multiple things or they're pulling from a bunch of clips. They have critics talking. They have fans talking, something like that about the experience.
The people
that
impacted, right?
Right, like right. Folks, the people like, that impacted. Like, exactly. Yeah. Exactly that.
In Hellblade's, you know, instance, like... especially because that game, I liked Hellblade a lot. I think I admired a lot of what it was trying to do, even though I recognize I've read the criticisms of how it handles mental illness and totally recognize all that stuff. But clearly, like, it resonated for a lot of people for that very particular reason. Right. And it would have been fantastic for there to be you're not going to get someone up there to talk about it, but having a package that was, like, someone that, like, that game spoke to them would have been extremely powerful and a reason to handle an award like that differently.
Having someone who was impacted by the game give the award even would have been incredible, right?
Sure.
And then even for those small bits, there are bits where they were like giving an award out by like through an aside briefly, again, like best whatever, best multiplayer game, best esport game, whatever, was like a thing that he said briefly. And there were other words where he said, all right, let me just name five more with just a shot on him with no b-roll, no like lower third, no graphics at all, and just like give me there are judges on this thing, right? There's a whole ream of people who write about games all day, who make videos about games all day. Like, ask the – say, like, oh, part of being a judge is you might be called on to write 20 words about why you voted for this. Like, let us put a 20 – like, a few sentences on the screen with some B-roll that says, like, oh, and this is why such and such is winning Indie Game of the Year. If you're not going to give them time on the stage to speak, if you're not going to show, you know, like, oh, just give us a little bit of something. Let the games shine. Let the creators, the actual creators, again, not just the executives, but the people on the teams shine. And the moments that worked were the moments that happened. Again, like, very emotional moments around some key winners. The voice actress from Hellblade who got up and won, which is a very interesting win given like this was her first voice acting job. I think there's probably an angle to kind of work through what her winning means here, you know, in relation to the actor strike and the notion that a notion that a lot of people put forward was like, oh, anybody can do this job, which is like I don't believe is true. It was the moments that landed because they felt like human moments and they felt like moments that understood the industry, and the ones that didn't were the chest thumping and the defensiveness and the like. Games are here. Games are real. McDonald's. And just like you have to find the way, and it's hard. It's hard. We had a guy dress up in a star when we launched our website and try to sell hamburgers. Like, yep. I get it. Mm-hmm. I get it. But like, we tried to figure out a way to do that that felt like a Waypoint like solution, a way that was in line with an attitude and a vibe, and with the whole show. And so like the thing that was so weird was like all of the pomp of having a live orchestra throwing to, did you know you could have Uber deliver you McDonald's or go on eBay and buy new headphones, felt really inconsistent.
I think they are, and again, like Patrick outlined, it's got to be a hell of a thing to put on a show like this, right?
Yeah, definitely. 100%.
I think they are heading in a direction where this is no longer like something that belongs on Spike. And I think that's a good thing. But it's going to be a little bumpy.
Yeah.
Along the way.
I can't speak to the financials, but I wonder if part of the part of probably what Keeley enjoys about the show is that it's broadly independent, but by being broadly independent, it means that you probably have to fill it with a lot of this advertising stuff in order to make the money work, right? Like, whereas if you had the backing of ABC or Spike, right? Spike was underwriting it, right? Like, so,
but
Spike was backing with ads because
go ahead. And Spike also filled it with celebrities that didn't know anything about games, right?
Yeah.
I think that's the
Remember it was Joel McHale?
Yeah.
Everyone remember that one?
God.
Oh my god,
that was unbelievable.
I mean, compared to that, this was a masterpiece. I mean,
if you have forgotten it, Go, there are like compilation clips of Joel McHale's performance. I mean, it is a, I'm glad it happened. I feel bad for everyone involved.
I think he deserves an Emmy for just the deep bitterness. The he didn't want to be there at all, and he just let it out.
It was a
bad show.
Oh, yeah.
The best thing about that was his obvious hostility toward the, like, utterly crass and shoddy, like, production that it was that year. Like, it was literally, like, hanging around in a man cave watching trailers. Like, it was bad.
Any other takeaways from that? Anything else you walked away with? Like, oh, that looks cool.
Austin, what do we think this From Software game is?
I
mean, like, seriously.
I think it's Bloodborne, and it gets announced this weekend at PSX. When is the PSX thing?
Soon.
It's like today?
I think it is this weekend. Yeah. It might be today.
We should know this. Hey, everyone on this call.
I think it's late tonight.
It looks like it's... Yeah, I think it is...
It's like this evening at like dinner time-ish. I think that is.
Let's get drunk and do another stream.
Yeah, I don't know. I want Bloodborne 2 because I liked Bloodborne, but I would be happier if it was something completely different. I would be more excited if they decided to do a Dark Souls. I want them to do another Dark Souls type game, but I would be happy with the setting being like radically different. I guess there were like Japanese characters in the background of that like brief.
Oh, there are Japanese characters back there. I hadn't seen that,
which got people thinking. They've made no indication they're going to reboot Tenchu, but like if you want to do a ninja Dark Souls, like
that'd be cool.
You know,
I'd be on board.
I'm into that. It's not Space Souls. It's not Mecha
it's
Souls.
Not Mecha
it's not Armored Souls.
It's not.
Although I'm curious,
it could be
because they said they're bringing back Armored Core.
Yeah,
like
fairly
we'll
hear
about
recently.
That next year.
Yeah.
I wonder if even that game like. Does not escape the Souls orbit in some way, like as opposed to being like a pure. Because when was the last Armored Core game?
It was
probably one on PS3.
There
right?
were two on PS. There were four on PS3. Armored Core 4, Armored Core 4
okay.
Answer, Armored Core 5, and Armored Core Verdict Day were all on PS3 and Xbox 360.
Jesus.
2013 was the last Armored Core. So that's
a while.
It's been a while. I'm like a huge fan of that series and can talk to you about how each one is different. Like I'm that dude. We deserve a good one. We deserve one that's like really, really good. They also did like ages ago. They did do like a fantasy style mech game that I can't quite remember the name of, which is. Bad. I feel like a liar about who I am in my life.
Especially with robot mech stuff.
That's what I'm saying. This is exactly it. Like, I'm Austin.
This is upsetting.
I am supposed to know this. What is the name of that game?
I'm pretty familiar with it. Let's see. From Software. What did they... I'm looking through their history. From Software video games. Not Chrome Hounds.
No, Chrome Hounds is great. We have a great article about Chrome Hounds on the site. People should look that up.
How old is it?
Old. Pre 2000? Frame Grid.
What?
Frame Grid. Sega Dreamcast.
Not Frame Grid?
That's an E at the end.
Oh, wow.
Dreamcast
I
game.
Remember. I imported this
yes,
game.
Yes, same.
Hold on. Let me look up some screenshots.
One-on-one arena combat with medieval-style mechs. Like, this could be a new Frame Grid. It's not. There's no way it's a new Frame Grid. but like it is like a weird fantasy thing that could totally do like the weird body horror stuff because like the mechs all still have like weird there's like bones and shit involved, you know, like there's definitely a little bit of
I am so because like if people haven't watched it, like the teaser is like extremely brief.
It's so
it's
vague.
Like, just a look at like a weapon maybe like
it looks like a
wrapped.
Fishing rod made of bone and wire and metal
and the sound the sound effects
it's
are
gross.
Unsettling and gross. I would be I saw some speculation in Reddit or somewhere that like you know if they like radically change sort of like their influence for the Souls type games as they go along. I guess Dark Souls and Demon Souls both pull from like medieval fantasy
like Western fantasy
and then Bloodborne was Lovecraft and it had some horror elements in the way that Lovecraftian stuff has horror elements, but that teaser gave off like a very like what if they decide to go straight up like horror like
hostile
Yeah.
That was a weird thing to focus on.
I would be in for a fucking fucked up From Software Dark Souls horror game.
Yeah.
Give it to me.
But I could also see it I could see it being like Japanese fantasy, especially after, like, not it would be a response to Neo necessarily, but like sometimes great minds have similar direction. Tenchu game that has the Neo or that has the Dark Souls vibe there. The teaser language was like shadows die twice. So that, you know, it could be Shadow Tower, but it could also shadows like a ninja, you know? So
I mean, the only reason I think people are thinking Shadow dies twice is Shadow Towers because of the term Shadow and twice would mean a sequel. Yeah. So
Shadow. Come on.
Come on, give me Kingsfield. Bring back
Kingsfield. Bring back Kuon, you know? Actually, wait a second. It could be Kuon. It could be Kuon. Which was their survival horror game. That's set in.
There was a PS2 game.
There was a PS2 game. It was set in like pre-samurai era Japan.
It was supposed to be pretty good. People had always kind of told me to play that game.
Play Kuon. If this is Kuon 2, you have to stream Kuon. You have to do it. Anyway,
so that's my. I'm excited to learn. Oh my god! Some of the character designs. Hell yeah! Give me a Dark Souls Kuon. Oh my god! This would be.
Good. It's cool. It's a very cool design game. It's a very dark, fucked up, good monsters.
I don't know. That's I'm just because I'm a From Software geek these days. That's the one that's kind of has sat with me. I don't know if anyone else saw anything that would stuck.
I started playing Breath of the Wild. It's new DLC last night. I'm gonna keep playing that today. New job simulator, vacation simulator. That looked cool.
Yeah.
Soul Calibur. I'm hopeful.
Oh, what did you guys think of that that PSVR thing that they showed right after the new job simulator?
Was that Accounting Plus?
Yes.
So that's already available. Accounting is already a game that you can get on Steam.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
It's from Justin
Roiland,
one of the co-creators of Rick and Morty.
Right.
His team has made two different VR games. And so Accounting Plus is probably an expanded version of that. And I think Accounting is free on Steam, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
We're checking out. Both VR games that he's been involved with they're very playful in VR in a way that a lot of games aren't. If Accounting is coming to PSVR, it takes like 40 minutes to play. It's super short, at least the one that's already out is. But it's really entertaining and
I have a real hard time with the like humor in terms of just like very screamy, very like,
yeah, that's what I was turned off
and
by.
It's just like not my thing. Like I know that it works for some people. I'm also just, I think I'm too close to the project because a friend of mine worked on a previous project by that team, the Crows team. And so it's like I'm a little too close. I know a little too much that I'm not going to talk about in terms of like behind the scenes shit. And it's like, you know, let people enjoy their thing. So nothing evil, nothing like immoral. Just like, turns out making games means that people's personalities clash sometimes, you know?
Bayonetta 3.
Bayonetta.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Switch. That's a good hit for the Switch. Exclusive. It made me start thinking about the Switch year two, right? Like, who else sees that the Switch has done really well this year and says, you know what? Yeah, we will sign that exclusivity deal with a game.
I hope that's already happened.
Me too. That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. I hope after seeing like Zelda, people are like, oh, yo, we got to get on this. But by the end of this year, with Zelda and Mario and, frankly, Xenoblade Chronicles and a lot of good indie titles on the platform and, you know, for what it's worth, ARMS. But also just like Mario Kart 8 Deluxe sold like gangbusters on that thing. Like, there's a big
Smash Brothers will have next year for sure.
Totally. So, like, I hope that we get more third-party stuff. I think companies like Sega are perfectly poised to do projects like Bayonetta 3 on the Switch. So, yeah. And this time, Patrick, you won't have to bring a big power brick to play it on a plane.
No. Oh, and I'm so excited that more people get a chance to play Bayonetta 2.
Yeah.
Like, that was a game that was unfortunately... The game only exists because Nintendo funded it, so I'm happy that it was on the Wii U.
Right.
But a lot of folks did not get a chance to play that, and I didn't play the original Bayonetta. Like, it's... I'm mixed on like Devil May Cry-ish sort of games. Like sometimes I like them and sometimes they do nothing for me. And the original Bayonetta didn't quite grab me, but Bayonetta 2 just really, really grabbed me. And so I'm really excited to see what they do with the third one. They're just really fun games, and they're ridiculous in a way that I enjoy. So,
last couple of things, I'd say Metro Exodus looked great. I was happy to see Dreams. I hope Dreams showed up with a newspaper with the current date on it to say that, like, we still exist, we're still alive, Dreams is happening.
Well, they actually showed, like, oh, I saw some platforming. Yeah. That's going to be a game. I couldn't tell how floaty the platforming was, so, like, I'm already, like, a little worried. Because that's sort of, like, my thing with them, but I'm willing to love again. I'm willing to open my heart to different types of approaches to jumping in video games. I'm trying to see what else.
Witchfire, which was the new Bulletstorm dev game.
Yep.
World War Z.
Which looked more interesting before the gun came out.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, I like the art direction of that game a lot. Yeah. And then it just became more of a... Well, it sounds like they're making a game that's more akin to Painkiller, right. Which I know that people
love Painkiller.
Like those games, so that's... I'm not dismissing it. It's more just like, wow, that's a like cool, like weird gothic fantasy art direction. And then I was like, that's a lot. I don't know. Maybe that game will have a cool story attached to it as well.
Oh, and we got the worst game title last night.
Oh.
From the game from the new
Payday. GTFO.
GTFO. fuck. Actually, I don't know if it's from that studio. It's from the people.
No, it's ex-Payday developers.
Payday devs are making...
The Payday developers are... I think they're actually revealing a game this weekend. Their Walking Dead game is getting unveiled this weekend.
But this game looks like... Years. It's very, like, alien aesthetic. Very, like, motion sensors and...
I thought it was going to be a straight-up, like, aliens game.
Instead, it's real creepy zombies. Space zombies, it looks like to me. Has a look. I think that might be it. I don't think anything else really stuck out. Zelda won Game of the Year. Also won Best Action Adventure Game. I think that was snuck out while Al Numa and the other producer were walking up to the stage. It also just won Action Adventure Game of the Year. And I think Best Direction too, right?
Yeah. What is Best Direction and Best and Game of the Year? What is the distinction there? Is that just so that you can give...
Because
Breath of the Wild won both of them,
I believe
And so, like, if for people that don't, like, watch the Oscars or, like, know the dynamic of, like, Oscar awards, like, often when it does occur that Best Director and Best Picture are one and the same, but often Best Director goes to something else that's not going to get Best Picture, and it's a way of, like, recognizing, like, that it was a phenomenal film. Without it getting Best Picture. And so that's part of the way the dynamic works out in the Oscars. But part of this, because there's, like, a very clear role of, like, what a director... direction in video games just seems like a much more amorphous sort of award.
Do you want the description? Do you want the one-liners?
So
Game of the Year is recognizing a game that delivers the absolute best experience across all creative and technical fields. And Game Direction is awarded to a game studio for outstanding creative vision and innovation in game direction and design.
Yeah, that doesn't... that No, those are the same... That doesn't... that's not a meaningful difference to me.
I guess I could see it in a different time in a weird way. Or, like...
Right? Like, you... you get to, like, a Super Meat Boy... Or even, like, a Kojima game, right? Like, I get it. Like, you're giving Best Direction to Hideo Kojima because, like, those games are clearly coming from, like...
But they're even saying awarded to a game studio. It's not even a personal award. So, like, I could see it being, like, it's almost reached just, like, more, like, most innovative or, like, most... it reads, like, just, like, oh, most striking. You know? Like, it's the one that left you going, like, huh, that's a thing. Whereas Best Game of the Year is, like, this is the best one. This one's the best one total. It's so weird. I don't know. It's tough. Near one for Best Audio or Best Music. That's something.
Yeah, actually, we didn't talk about the fucked up thing is how shitty our colleagues in the video game industry are. That, like, Nier Automata was not even up for Game of the Year.
Y'all fucked up.
Bad.
Y'all fucked up.
I feel like I fucked up by not... I guess I didn't yell at enough people to play that game.
We yelled pretty loudly, Patrick.
We did yell pretty loud.
We did.
We did our part.
We did.
Yeah, I think people have gotten that message.
It makes me angry that game wasn't in the lineup. How is that not in the fucking lineup? Come on.
It would have lost. That's okay.
What were all the games? So it was Super Mario... It was Zelda. It was Horizon Zero Dawn.
It was Persona 5, and it was Battlegrounds.
Persona 5. You know what? You fucking drop Persona 5. Sorry. Nier Automata. Don't most Persona fans think that Persona 5 wasn't even that great?
I still think that they want their, you know what I mean? They want theirs. Also, you just go to 6. You can just go to 6. Some of these categories have 6. Best music has 6.
The Oscars did. They just said, just add like 3 more and they won't win.
Yep.
But they get in the part of a montage. Yes,
exactly. Best ongoing game was a bit of a confusing thing too. Awarded to a game for outstanding development of ongoing content that evolves the player experience over time.
Shouldn't that not be a winnable award?
This is like, oh, you did good this year. Keep hustling.
I just don't get it. It's inherently flawed, the title of that award.
It's ongoing, you know. It's not done yet. It's good. They're making progress. The game, the award.
So that in that respect, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, that game ain't even at
1.0.
It's ongoing, my friend.
I think that's going to do it. I can hear us being drained over Dr. Disrespect, one trending gamer, which felt like the most like obvious thing that I didn't want to happen, but
nothing ever goes wrong with the Trending Gamer Award.
Next year's your year, Rob. I'm rooting for you.
I'm just saying 100%. Like, it sort of seems like, all right, this is our trending gamer of the year. And then the milkshake duck timer begins. Although in some cases, it's not even the milkshake duck situation. It's like there were legitimate reasons to be wary of this from the word go.
Right. Hey, did you know there was a category that was, I missed this somehow, best Chinese game?
What?
A fan voted the award to recognize the most popular game in China as judged by the Game Awards viewers in China.
Oh, he slid that in. Yeah.
Because the awards are being streamed on... isn't like Tencent was involved in the awards somehow? There was like some reason that existed, which was like related to that.
Okay, yeah. JX3HD won. So, shout outs to JX3HD, which is a very pretty looking MMO that I've not seen any of until this moment. They jump. That's going to do it for us, I think. Is anyone... Jeff, do you want to talk about where people can find you on the internet? What are you working on right now? Where can people find you?
The new Jurassic Park movie comes out next year, so go see that.
Is it just called Jurassic World 2?
It's just called... No. It's called Fallen Kingdom, why the fuck please. Are we continuing to go back to this goddamn island?
Why are we? Why are you going back?
There's a volcano!
I saw the trailer muted because that's the best way you need to watch those things.
Yep.
And, fuck, man. How does anybody smile for a second in that trailer? People are smiling because they're like, oh, we forgot.
Dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs are so cute. They start off as babies before they kill all of us.
Some of them are vegetarians, right?
Yeah.
God damn.
Does it have
it.
Another
and Jeff Goldblum's back?
I saw that. That looked cool. Does it have another like mutant one? Like another mutant super dino?
Well, it's the volcano dino, right?
No, but yeah, there's a I forget what it's what
the Volcanosaurus?
It's like a queen. Yeah, he's like
Man,
a shadow of the Colossus. He's got volcanoes.
If the volcano
on
came
back.
Alive, I'd be more interested. Let's fucking get Colin Trevor, get him off these movies.
Okay, real quick. First, you can't outrun a pyroclastic flow. All right, that's dumb. Like everybody there is dead. All right, that's just not going to work.
That's a regular one.
It's been tried.
This is a prehistoric pyroclastic flow. The fire used to go slower.
Yes.
Yeah. As everyone in Pompeii discovered.
Yeah.
We got this. Everyone made it out. But the other thing is, Chris Pratt is. It's like he's become the guy you cast when your movie's not fun.
Yeah.
But you need somebody to suggest the idea that it might be fun. That's Chris Pratt now. It's like, well, this script is lifeless and turgid. Chris Pratt, here we go.
Congratulations, Jeff.
That was whimsical and airy.
I get that a lot.
Being whimsical and airy and finally bringing a good deal of joy to the lives of the people of Jurassic World. Fallen Kingdom.
It's not a bad trait to have,
yeah.
I'll tell you.
How do you find the time to write about technology in between being whimsical and airy?
Well, the movie stuff's just like a moonlighting thing.
I see. It's like a Patreon. It's like a side deal.
Yeah,
well,
that's
hobby.
Easy. It's doing a 3-hour podcast every week. That's the problem.
That's the thing that'll drain you.
That's the hustle.
Where can people find you on the internet, Jeff?
You can check out all the new video stuff I'm doing at CNET. Just follow me on Twitter at Jeff Bacalar, and of course the Giant Beastcast every Friday.
Awesome. Well, except that this one and the last one you were not on, so.
Yeah, but that's, you know, that's a little little stain on the legacy that is my tenure there.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it's a little stain on the Beastcast. I thought you were going to say, like, and that's on them. You know, that's the Beastcast.
Oh, it's without a doubt on them. Okay. They'll never live that down. Like, they've been texting me regret after regret. So it's their problem.
Awesome. What's your Twitter again?
My Twitter is at Jeff Bacalar.
There it is. Rob Zachney, where can people find you on the internet?
At Rob Zachney on Twitter.
How about you, Patrick?
Well, you won't find me at Butthole Drip because nobody registered it.
Someone's going to register it.
Fix it.
That's bad. What's that Butthole Drip dot is?
Oh, no. Don't.
Nothing. You know, no one has it yet.
Well, nobody has to register these sites for us. Nobody has to redirect these. We're fine.
Buttholedrip.biz.
Okay. All right.
Because your butthole's busy. Dripping.
You can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. You can follow everything we do at waypoint.vice.com. You can follow us at Twitter at twitter.com/waypoint, facebook.com/waypointvice. We're over on YouTube, youtube.com/waypointvice. We streamed the video game awards, me, Danica, and Natalie last night, and you can find that over at twitch.tv/waypoint. I don't think that one's going to make its way into the YouTube archive, so if you want to watch that, just go over to Twitch and click on videos up at the top. And if you want to talk to us, head over to discourse.zone, our message boards, which have an incredible mod team. We are there, so check us out there. As always, thank you to Bowen for letting us use his track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Until Monday, I think it's time for us to turn in, to tune in, to... I'm tired. I don't have it in me today. I need a little something.
You need a little nap.
I just need a little nap. All right. I think that's it. Peace.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.